again, everybody. Welcome to the Mainland Podcast. It's episode number 87. I'm Michael Citro. I'm the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. Joining me is one of our outstanding writers, Dave Rowe. Dave, how are you this evening?
Well, I'm a mixed bag. I obviously I'm a little down about the results of the last game. However, I did actually get to make it down for my first game in the Purple Palace, and it is as beautiful as everyone has said. So that part was nice.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about your experience your first time at the at Orlando City Stadium. I wanted to ask you, like, sort of where you sat, what you thought of the noise level and the atmosphere and all that good stuff.
Oh, well, we went to the standing section. There was no doubt about that. I mean, yeah, if you're gonna go for the first time, and you have to do that. So we did. I actually went down with some friends who actually. Quick personal shout out to Mark Johnson, who is a listener, and it's going to be his birthday tomorrow. Oh, nice. On Thursday. Yes, so happy birthday to him. But he and I traveled down Sunday morning, came back late Monday morning because we both had to be at work on Monday morning in Tallahassee. But the noise was fantastic. The being able to see just how the overhang, I mean, trust me, I was taking it all in at the same time I was trying to watch the game. But that standing section is as magnificent as it appears on TV. You know, it's funny. Somebody asked me, well, did you get any food while you're there? I'm like, no, I was in the standing section where I don't have a lap to put anything in.
You know? Yeah, right.
You got a cup holder, but you know, otherwise, you know, you're kind of hosed on that, which is fine. You know, it's not that I need to eat anything, it was fantastic. The noise was great. The supporters were obviously in for us, another sellout. It was great atmosphere despite the outcome, and I look forward to coming back.
All right, and I know you're a beer guy. Did you make it to the Broken Cauldron before the game?
I was not able to get to the cauldron. Like I said, We were on it down and back, man. We were on it down and back. I had to. As a matter of fact, I had to not partake while I was at the match because I was the one that was tasked with driving back to Tallahassee.
Oh, well, at least you got to see the place. It's really nice. I mean, it's unfortunate that, you know, that early handball ruined the game. But why don't we go ahead and get into that? We'll, before we get to New York City, though, we played two games since we last spoke, I believe. And the Lions went out to San Jose. Have never beaten the San Jose Earthquakes. I've never lost to the San Jose Earthquakes. It's been a tie every time. And you know, they go out to San Jose and had some chances, kind of dominated the possession, and just not quite able to find the scoreboard until just an unbelievably beautiful play, one of the best team goals of the year, with Kaká sort of drawing two defenders toward himself, releasing PC down the left sideline and left flank there. And PC, like, didn't do what most guys do and just, you know, zip it across the top of the six. I mean, he cut it back on the ground, back up toward the penalty spot where Rivas was waiting to make a nice one-touch shot into the back post and put Orlando City up in the 80th minute. And it felt like, you know, the Lions were finally going to get a win in California.
Yeah, you know, you're that late in the match, it's, you know, Rivas finally, you know, I say finally comes through. I mean, he played hard all game, but to get that goal, you were feeling really good about things at that point, and unfortunately, it was just not meant to be.
Nope. 3 minutes later, as we listened to your cat serenading you, 3 minutes later, we heard Tommy Thompson had come on late for San Jose to try to provide some offense. And his sort of ineptitude at providing offense ended up providing offense, because off of a corner scramble, the ball popped out to him. He took a shot. It kind of squibbed off the end of his foot and fell perfectly for the one guy you don't want to get the ball, and that's Wando. And he put it on goal, and Bendick got a piece but couldn't get squared up and keep it out, and it was just 3 minutes of leading the game before it was tied at one.
And, you know, that Wando goal, I mean, you know, give it to him. He was in right place, right time, et cetera. It's one of those ones that, you know, if you're an Orlando City fan, you hate to see. you know, I don't think that there was anything else that Bendick could have done on that one, honestly. You know, he even kind of moved to the right spot. He just it was that quick ticky-tack thing that there's not, you know, even a reaction save would have been a miracle. You know, we've said it before, if you go on the road in MLS, it's going to be hard to win. You know, they came out of there with a point. Given what happened the next game, I mean, I wish we would have gotten three. But but that being said, you know, at the time, you know, I hated to see it that late in the game. But I was also like, okay, you know, we haven't won out there. We, you know, we still were able to get a point. I'll take it.
Mm-hmm. Now, it wasn't the end of the game, obviously. There were still a few minutes left to try to pull that back and come away with all 3 points. And in the 91st minute, Carlos Rivas unleashed Kaká down the right side of the box. And, you know, probably not a guy on the club you'd rather have in that situation, 1v1 with the goalkeeper. And Kaká shot, and Bingham saved it. And so it did end up in a draw. But it looked for a minute in the 91st minute like things were going to look good, pretty good for Orlando. They had the right guy on the ball in the box. He had some options to his left. Maybe he decided, you know, I'm going to just win this thing right here. But maybe he could have found MPG or even, I believe it was Laren coming in from the left to try to, you know, it's always risky to make that pass in the box when you're leading the break. But if he makes it there, it may have given somebody a tap in with no goalkeeper to speak of.
Well, it could have, but if I'm one of the, you know, greatest players to ever play the game, and it's the 91st minute and I've got the ball in the box, I'm probably taking that shot too. So, you know, give it up to Bingham for making a good save.
Yep.
You know, it's I wasn't, you know, obviously I would have loved to see the goal, but I don't think that Kaká made a bad choice. Like I said, I think Bingham just made a good save. Mm-hmm. The nice thing is that, as we've seen most of the year, Orlando just did not give up. Okay, so you know, they're up one nothing, you know, they pull it back, and you know, so a lot of teams, okay, well, let's just get out of here. Well, no, they kept pressing. So that's something to be happy about. I think that you know, like I said, if I'm Kaká, I'm taking that shot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he made a bad choice. I don't think there was a bad choice. I think it's a good choice if he passes. I think it's a good choice if he shoots. Either one was good because, you know, he had guys in more advantageous situations, but you can never count on the fact that you put the perfectly weighted pass right in their path and you know, anything can happen, really. He took it on his own foot, which obviously is also not a bad play. 1v1 with the keeper. You've got to think that you can win that battle. And so there wasn't a bad decision to be made. What would have been cool, though, is if he did find MPG and he scored his first Orlando City goal against his old team. That would have been really cool.
That would have been cool, except for the fact that it would have ruined your prediction.
Yeah, well, I want him to prove me wrong. I say he's never going to score a goal for Orlando City, but I want him to desperately to prove me wrong. And he would have really had a hard time missing from there. I mean, it would have been like Wando against Belgium kind of thing.
Yes, that's true. And of course, you know, we're sure that he's a listener. I mean, obviously, so he knows about you, you know, putting that challenge out to him. I'm absolutely certain about that. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
We have this podcast translated into Spanish just for him.
Right. Remind me who on staff does. It's my cat that does that for us, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, 1-1, it's not bad. I mean, San Jose, again, Orlando going against a team that hasn't lost at home, and they didn't lose again. So they come home with a point. That's not too bad, especially, Dave, when you consider the starting lineup.
Yeah, that was weird.
There was no Jonathan Spector. He was sick. He was supposed to start alongside first-time MLS starter Leo Pereira. Now, Pereira started with Aha because Spector got sick. Aha was supposed to get the rest, and Aha would go on to get the rest on Sunday. So it was Pereira and Aha, and he moved, he switched left backs. Instead of Toya, we saw PC. And when I saw that, considering the fact that neither of those guys has played a game in MLS, and neither of those guys have played with OCB in a while, I was like, what?
You know, right.
But obviously, I don't, you know, we don't get to to see all of training. We don't get to see what they're doing in practice and you know, how fit they are showing themselves to be. You just don't expect somebody that's not been playing 90 minutes to get a road start on the West Coast at 10:40 something at night Eastern time and have it turn out to be pretty good. But I thought the defense held up very, very well. And PC had himself quite a game, was very, very dangerous bombing forward, did a good job in possession, passed well, cracked a monster strike that hit the crossbar, so a little bit unlucky not to get his first MLS goal, and he did get his first MLS assist.
And he did seem to be everywhere on the field that night. Like you said, that was a great debut for him. You're right. You know, when we saw the lineup come out, I'm sure there was a lot of us shaking our heads, you know, kind of like what? You know, okay, Spectre being sick, obviously that you know, that's a no-brainer. Yeah, for both him Pereira to go out there and have the game they did, I think that's a one of the reasons why we were able to come out of there with a draw and almost a win is that whether it was just, hey, this is my first time out and I'm going to do the, you know, best I can or whatever. But they, you know, there wasn't a huge drop off for the defense. And then, like you said, with, you know, PC pushing forward and getting that shot and that shot, oh my goodness. It was that when he hit it, I was like, okay, cool goal. But, you know, both of them did an excellent job. And then the other, you know, part of that was, of course, you know, neither Kaká or Rivas started. So
right.
That was the other. It's like, okay, well, not only do we have two brand new guys, it's like, okay, I guess we're resting people at the beginning of the match. What's going on? You know, and of course, it ended up working out well.
Yeah, so not only does, you know, do we have two new guys back there, we don't have the calming Jonathan Spector influence, but also, you know, they don't have the typical guys to play off of, so it's a bunch of backups in there, and you know, kudos to Jason Christ for doing the squad rotation. He said he needed to try something different. He did. He got a result, not all three, but he got one, and he came very close, like I said, within the width of a crossbar, or about half the width of a crossbar from getting all 3 points. So not a bad decision on his part. There were a couple scary 1v1 defending moments for PC, but they turned out okay. And you know, Pereira did a nice job. He had to recover for Carrasco turnovers a couple of times, and he ended up, you know, he had to take a yellow on one, and the other one he made a nice play, clear it out. So, you know, a pretty good debut for both guys. In fact, I did the player grades on Wednesday night at an ungodly hour and ended up giving PC my man of the match. Who was your man of the match, Dave?
My man of the match, let me think. I'm gonna have to go along with you just because he was all over the field. PC, you know, getting a shot, creating chances, getting back, you know, on defense. I mean, I said it when we first started, you know, talking about the game. He was everywhere. So yeah, it was. You know, you throw that in with your, you know, your debut out on the West Coast and everything else that's going on. That was an excellent showing from him. You know, it was we would have liked if his goal had gone in, but otherwise, you know, you can't take anything away from his performance.
Right. All right. So those guys had a great debut. Definitely earned some more minutes. In fact, Pereira started on Sunday against NYCFC, which I didn't like for a couple reasons. One, the guy hadn't been playing, and he just played 90 3 days before on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, going up against, like, I guess a less dynamic trio of attackers for San Jose than he certainly would see with New York City. Harrison and Villa are a handful for anybody, even the most experienced defenders in MLS, and I was a little concerned about that. And plus, when he played, he moved Spector because it's easier for Spector to move over with his experience to the right side of the central defense, where Spector had been playing the left side. So it's a little bit of an adjustment for Spector as well as playing against or playing alongside a new partner for the first time, and a guy playing in only his second game, and here he is having to deal with. You know, not only because New York bombs forward so much, not only Villa and Wallace and Harrison, but also Maxi Rodriguez, Alexander Ring, you know, guys like that. So I was a little concerned there, and it turned out with pretty good reason because yeah. he was getting torched pretty good early on, although I think he settled into the game okay after his talking to from the ref. He had two pretty good chop downs on Villa that gave them – you know, advantageous free kick opportunities, and of course, you know, you never want to do that. But also, either of those could have been yellow cards on their own.
Right.
And he ended up getting yellow carded, but not until stoppage time. So, so he did survive. But, you know, he didn't have the best night. But again, you could say that about a lot of guys. I thought that the New York game to me was an odd game because it was 3-0. And, you know, New York definitely deserved to win the game. But if you watch the run of play, it was much more balanced than previous games against New York City, where they seemed to have all of the attack and still lose the game. It was much more evenly, you know, the ball was evenly possessed by both teams pretty much. I think it was 50.1 to 49.9 at the half or something like that. And I think it ended up only moving about a half a percent or a percent.
Yeah. It was like 51, it was 51-49 or 52-48. I mean, it was something
yeah.
really
so
close.
So it was very close. The shots were close. You know, New York just had more golden opportunities and they got the early break, huge break when the ball popped up and hit Kaká's arm. And it was, to me, it looked like a no brainer. It looked like a penalty and Kaká didn't complain about it at all. He hung his head, and I really think in some respects, Dave, that you know, that penalty and then Villa scoring on the spot kick, it seemed to, which is weird for a veteran, but it seemed to mess with his mind and disrupt his game.
As we said, I was at the game and I was in the standing section, and I was actually on that side of the field on the standing section. And mm-hmm. so I had essentially I did not even have to turn my head to see that. And it was absolutely without a doubt a handball and an inadvertent one, but a legitimate handball. As a matter of fact, some of my friends are like, "Oh no, come on!" I'm like, I just kind of turned. I was like, "No, that was a handball."
I mean, it wasn't intentional,
no.
But his arm was out from his body, and he gained an advantage
because of
having
it, right.
The ball hit it. Yeah,
so, exactly. So you know, for those of us who watch a lot, if you saw it, you're like, "Oh yeah, okay." I mean, like you said, Kaká just went, "Oh yeah, okay." I mean, he knew it too. So, you know, I don't know if it was that or if it was that plus all the travel or being tired or who knows. You know, it could have been anything, but he did seem to not be able to bounce back after that, at least not in the way that we're used to from the captain. And but even after that, even after you know, Villa puts that penalty away, you know, at that point I was still okay. I was like, okay, you know, we're still well in this. That's a, mm-hmm. you know, penalties, you know, something like that happens. It sucks, but it's not like it's a, you know, run a play goal where you're getting beat because of, you know, a breakdown to defense or something like that. You know, that's, you know, if somebody scores a penalty kick, okay, you know, I mean, heck, Bendik even went to the right direction, just he wasn't able to get a hand on it. So, I mean,
right. Villa made a perfect kick inside the post. So,
exactly.
It's my thought immediately was, I'm glad it's early in the game. The only other better time to give up a penalty is when you're up three goals. You're up three or four goals, then that one penalty is probably not going to hurt you too much. But yeah, it was not. It was, to me, the first goal was going to be always very important with both teams coming back from the West. New York City had played Wednesday night at Real Salt Lake and got beat. And Orlando City obviously played at San Jose. In my experience, the weird thing is the team coming home off a long road trip usually has a harder time getting into gear than the team that's already on the road and makes the long trip. I don't know why that is, but I thought San Jose looked sluggish on Wednesday. They were coming back from Colorado, which isn't quite as long a trip, but they do have altitude to deal with, kind of. But, you know, the New York rested their entire attacking line for the most of the game, and they came in rested. And I thought, well, the first goal is very important. When they scored the penalty, I thought, well, not ideal, but the next goal really is going to make or break this game.
Right.
And unfortunately, New York got that one before halftime with a just a nice play on an overlap, and the ball got through to the back post. And, you know, that's what New York does, is they get down the end quickly, mm-hmm. and they cross the ball in. And if you're not perfectly positioned, it's probably going to be a tap-in goal at the far post. And this is where I think, you know, Spector moving to the right side hurt, because yep. he would have been the left center back and may have been able to sniff that out and yep. get in the way of that cross.
Absolutely.
Maybe not, but I think he's probably got a better chance of doing it than Leo Pereira.
You're completely right. It was kind of a perfect storm. Now I want to go back to what you said about the when the home team comes back, that they have a disadvantage versus the team that stays on the road. That actually makes sense to me. You know, okay, whether you're coming back from the West Coast or not, you're in that we're on the road mentality. So you've made that adjustment versus, hey, we just got back from the West Coast. Okay, I'm back in my bed. Okay, that's nice. I'm settling back in, whatever. You know, it's a shift in mentality. So I think that, you know, being on the road, staying on the road, you know, whether it's one game or two games, three games, whatever, that can, in that situation, that might work out for you. As far as the back line, you know, the shift, we all understand why Jason did it. It makes more sense from a tactical standpoint to move Spector over there, because he has more experience. He can make the adjustments better, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that it's going to work out as we saw. So if Spector was in his usual position, does he have a better chance of sussing that out? Yes, of course he does. You know, that being said, you know, New York, you know, we won the first two games. I'm sure they had a bit of a chip on their shoulder when it came to this, and coming into our house and to be the first one to steal one away in the Purple Palace. So, you know, I'm sure they were probably pretty motivated, and I think our guys were maybe a little mentally tired, and that, and then going down a goal and then down two goals, that works against you.
Yeah, it was always going to be tough from that point out. And I thought that, you know, 2-0, it was definitely vital to get the next goal. And, yep. you know, it was one of those cases where if we get the next goal, maybe we can mm-hmm. squeak out a draw here. And I kind of wanted to, because I think I predicted a 2-2 draw. But the opportunity presented itself early in the second half with a penalty. Scott Sutter gets into the box, gets taken down, clear penalty. And, you know, that's when I went, oh, crap, Kaká's on the bench.
Yep.
Who's going to take this? And, you know, Giles Barnes was there. Will Johnson was there. Kyle Larin was there. Kyle ultimately took it, and he went for power and unfortunately cracked it off of the post, and not even in a good way where it bounced right back to him. It bounced out of play for a throw-in. And that really, you could see that took the rest of the wind out of Orlando City's sails.
It absolutely did. I mean, it took – that was on our side of the field. That was on the standing side of the field. So, I mean, I'm watching that thing up close and personal. And I, you know, so for those of you who've been there, you got the railings there that you can hold on to. I mean, my hands were on the railings, and I had just like gone down like I was doing a power squat or something like that. I was head was, you know, in between my arms. I was, it was one of those, just could not believe that. Like you said, not only did it hit the pole, but it hit the pole and then just went nowhere. So, I will be honest with you. I was a little surprised when Kyle stepped up to take it. For some reason, I just thought it was going to be somebody. Don't ask me who it was going to be, you know, but some reason I was thinking to myself, okay. And I also knew Kaká was out. I think in the back of my head, I was going, okay, maybe Johnson does it, or, you know, I don't know. But, I mean, of course you would think, okay, well, Kyle's a striker. He knows how to shoot for the goal. So yeah, but at the same time, it's still like, cause I can remember very vividly, it did slightly like twinge in my head. I was like, that's a little odd. I'm feeling odd about that. So,
yeah, strikers are not always, it seems counterintuitive, but strikers are not always the best penalty takers on a team, despite the fact that their job is to score goals.
Right.
It's borne out in Europe. It's borne out everywhere. Bundesliga, you know, Spain, England, everywhere. You know, you'll see teams that have their best penalty taker is not always their starting striker. It's sometimes someone else. And obviously Kaká is, you know, there's a lot of elements. You have to be confident and you have to be very good at placement. And I think Kyle's form hasn't been great in the last five games. You know, probably it was, the thought was, here's Laren, here's Barnes, and here's Johnson. Johnson is now the captain because Kaká's gone off.
Right.
He probably decided, you know, Kyle says, I want to take it. And his thought is probably, you know, this would be a good opportunity. He makes it, gets his confidence going, and you know, right, goes on a tear and scores a couple more goals in the next few games. But so, you know, pretty sound thinking there. Barnes hadn't scored a goal yet, so here's another guy you can say maybe we can get him going if he takes this kick. He hasn't opened his account yet and that kind of thing, and maybe that was an opportunity there. And Barnes is a veteran. He's taken penalties in MLS before and that kind of thing. So, you know, for Laren, it was his first MLS penalty. He took one a couple of years ago in the Ponte Preta friendly in stoppage time. So it was a tie game. There wasn't really – it's a friendly. There's not a whole lot on the line. You want to win, but it's a friendly, so who cares,
sure,
really. And he made it. And I remember talking to him after the game, and I asked him about, you know, the penalty, and he says he always goes to that corner, the bottom right corner. And so I had that in my mind. I remembered that. I was sitting in the press box watching him getting ready to take his penalty, and I said, yeah, he says he always goes low right. And he went right, but he decided to try to go upstairs.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could say, well, maybe he did. That was maybe in the back of his mind, is I got to do something that I haven't done before, or maybe it was in the back of his mind that you know, I'm just going to hit it for power or whatever. I don't know, but I couldn't tell you. But I just know that he was inches from being a hero and maybe putting his team back in the game, because Orlando City really looked like they were getting on the front foot right before, like about the 5 minutes before that penalty was taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you were also right that when it hit the pole and nothing came of it, the wind came out of the sails, and you could I deflated, literally deflated. So you know, I can only imagine, you know, what that did to Kyle and everybody else on the pitch. So you know, once again, I go back to what I said was, I guess in the back of my head, for whatever reason, because Kaká was off, I was probably not consciously doing so, but thinking, okay, Johnson's going to take this. And of course it didn't happen, which I know we had a post, an article this week about, okay, so if Kaká's not out there, who should be taking this? So I encourage right. everybody to read that.
Yeah. And I want to make sure that everybody knows, we didn't say Laren shouldn't take them.
No, that's not what we're saying.
We said that Laren is one of the, probably one of the guys you consider for that role.
Absolutely.
And he might make his next 20, who knows, but you know, his first one had to come sometime. It came then, and it was unfortunately not successful. But, you know, we're sure that Kyle will hit one before his career's over.
Well, not only that, but we know that, you know, Kyle's scoring his once every couple games. So, I mean, we can almost guarantee that he's going to get one in the next game just because of how his stats seem to go.
Yeah, we got to get him back to the hot Kyle Laren. We've had the cold Kyle Laren lately. We got to have the hot Kyle Laren back. So we'll get into that in a little bit, because he's going to have an opportunity this weekend. So anyway, New York went on to add another Villa goal, and a goal that, from my vantage, looked way offside live. And then I watched the replay and went, nope, he was on.
Yep. Yeah, unfortunately.
Maxi Morales made a great pass, and you know, Morales' through ball to Villa was just absolutely perfectly timed. I think it was Toya that kept him on. He was stepping. He just didn't quite get there in time. Just kind of like, it was just kind of that kind of weak. I mean, Bendik just a smidge earlier probably smothers Wando's shot. You know, PC's is just a smidge from being a goal. Laren's is a smidge
off,
from being a goal.
Yep.
Just almost an offside on also Kaká, his handball.
Yep.
He was pulling his arm down at the time it hit his arm.
Yep.
So if it's a split second later, even if it hits his arm, it's up against his body and it's no penalty. So it was just really,
we were 3 inches off all night.
Yeah, it was just that kind of week for Orlando City. Now, This is going to sound odd. My man of the match is going to sound a little strange because he's a player that you didn't probably even think about when you're watching the game. But I went back later and I thought about his performance. I definitely noticed his energy at the start of the game. And I went back and looked at some of the advanced stats. And Antonio Nocerino is my man of the match. I thought he had a pretty good game. He came off early as the team started to chase it. But I thought he had a pretty good game. And I didn't really think anyone else in particular stood out for me.
That's as good as mine or better maybe. How many times have we spoken of Nocerino this year saying, you know, people will get on him and we're sitting there going, well, you know, he didn't, okay. Yeah. You didn't see him or you didn't think of anything in particular that he did that was fantastic, but he was solid all night. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you went back and you looked and, oh yeah, look at that. He was solid all night. So, and in a night when solid wins, the man of the match, well, that was unfortunately that type of night. You know, for me, it's going to be Rivas just because at least early, he had good energy. He was trying to create chances, you know, and at least he was hustling, you know. And so once again, we go back to, hey, the guy was hustling. You know, it was that bad of a night as far as
he did provide some threats with some service. Kyle just couldn't quite get on
right.
A couple of crosses that he put in there that were really nice crosses. He did have I know everybody thinks he went for goal on the long free kick, but I honestly think he was trying to bend that back across the six and he just didn't hit it right.
Yeah.
I absolutely don't believe he was shooting, because if he was shooting, it would have had a heck of a lot more pace on it.
Oh yes. Because when Rivas shoots, when he shoots, there is no curveball.
No, I think he just mishit an attempted cross because he needed to get a lot of curl on that to try to get it flush across the oncoming attackers, but he didn't hit it right and it went wanting. In fact, the only decent chance after the missed penalty was Luis Gil had a nice cutback where he shot toward the far post, and it was on target, and Johnson had to make a diving punch at it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Gil more than anyone else threatened the goal after Laren's miss. But Nocerino had he led the team in tackles. I think he tied for the most interceptions. I've heard a couple of people on Twitter and in our threads saying that the midfield got overrun, but the possession and the shots don't really bear that out, especially when you consider the fact that Nocerino didn't get beat by anybody hardly all night.
Right.
And the back line didn't end up with a lot of tackles. So, you know, usually if the midfield's getting overrun, you're giving up a ton of shots, especially in the middle of the pitch, and your defenders are going to have a lot of tackles and clearances. And that wasn't the case. So I don't think the midfield got overrun. I just think the teams played fairly evenly, except in the final third. I think New York was very good in the final third, and Orlando City was off in the final third.
Yep.
Because if you go look at the passing chart, I don't think Orlando City had a complete pass in the area.
Yeah, right, and I completely agree with you. I was going to say, you know, everything but the midfield. So, and not just they were productive in the final third, and we weren't, but also, you know, our defense was a little bit off because of the moves that had to be made, and yeah. You know, theirs was, you know, fairly solid despite, you know, Rivas getting some decent balls in. But you know, for whatever reason, you know, whether it's Kaká being out mentally, Laren being out mentally after the miss on the penalty or whatever, they were never able to get back on the front foot and or have that killer mentality that they have had most of the year. I mean, you know, like we were just saying not too long ago at San Jose, you know, the not give up. And I'm not saying that they quit.
I think really
it's just the belief.
I think they had a confidence crisis after the penalty miss. I think
yes.
That they were still in the game until the penalty miss.
Yes.
And you know, there was still quite a few minutes to play, but at that point, you know, you've just blown an opportunity. You're not going to get a better opportunity to go 2-1.
Well,
it's just a lot, especially. The thing is, your body's already tired from the trip, and now your mind is tired, and then nothing works.
And then your heart's tired, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know,
well,
I thought going in, it's hard to beat any team three times in a year, let alone three times in 12 games.
Correct.
So it was always going to be a tough ask to beat New York City again. And hey, kudos to the visitors for getting their first win in six meetings, in the last six meetings, and only their second win ever in the series. So that's not too bad. If you win the season series against New York City FC 2 years in a row, and they're a playoff team, which they are, you'll take that, I think, most times. But it obviously. Everybody's ready for this slump to be over, this slump of results. I think that the performances haven't been bad. The results haven't been what we wanted, but I think you can make a case that they deserve 3 points against Toronto. I think you can make a case that they deserve three against San Jose. I think for sure we're all going to throw out the Houston game. But
What Houston game? I thought we already threw that out.
but other than that, I don't think they're getting run off the pitch. I just think it's just a matter of regrouping and getting some belief back and get some confidence back. I mean, this team over two seasons has had a lot of bad results, and I think it's harder for a team like that to mentally regroup when they go winless for a couple games than it is for a team like, let's say, FC Dallas loses two games in a row. They're going to probably be able to bounce back a lot quicker because they're used to winning. They have that mentality.
Right.
They're not going to get their belief shaken. And I think this team could get their belief shaken. I think it is shaken, but I think they have an opportunity, and they know they have an opportunity coming up this weekend at Minnesota and then coming home to play DC United team that's, struggled this season. Didn't mean to do my snake impersonation there and just kind of fumbled over my words, but DC United, those are two winnable games, and I'm not saying that they're going to win them both, because again, one win on the road this year and having to go to Minnesota, which they have gotten a lot better in recent weeks. They've given teams a lot tougher challenges in the last several weeks, especially at home.
Right.
And they're going to be fired up, wanting to get a win for Adrian Heath. They're going to be wanting to get Kevin Molino a goal against his old team. So it's not going to be easy Saturday night, but certainly there is an opportunity. Certainly this is not one of the West's finer teams. So
Well,
there's a
and we're
chance
going to
there.
get into that, more a little later. The other thing I wanted to mention is, and we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, how tough this month was going to be with as
Oh,
many games.
brutal month. Yeah.
Brutal month. So, we had high hopes at the beginning. We were hoping that, we go and we steal something here or there, and that the home stretch, maintains. Well, okay, so that didn't happen. But, if you go back and you count the number of games and the amount of time, it's no wonder that they're physically and mentally tired. So, and it unfortunately, it's not necessarily. I mean, yes, we're actually having a break this week where we only have to preview one match.
Yeah, it's a normal week. It's a
It's a
normal work
normal
week for
week,
them.
right? So go
So that's
us.
good. Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we turn our attention to the Orlando Pride? Because the Orlando Pride, they're on a little bit of a different streak here. They are three games without a loss now, as they have gone up to Seattle and drew 1-1 with the rain. And I think that I did not consider this a game that the team could get a result in. I didn't. I just thought the Reign was the highest scoring team in MLS, or I'm sorry, in NWSL. And Orlando Pride have had some issues in the back a little bit with giving up shots, giving up chances. Maybe not always the most organized at times, but they play hard. And I thought that there was a chance to maybe, if they could hold the Reign under two goals, to maybe get a draw and possibly even steal 3 points. And lo and behold, they held them under two and got the draw. In fact, it was nil-nil pretty deep into the game. And then disaster struck for the Pride, actually. Ashlyn Harris, on a goal kick, pulled up, no contact, went down, and was in obviously a lot of pain. And they had to come out, and then the trainers came out, and they ended up taking her out of the game. And we will talk more about Ashlyn in a minute.
Right.
And so normally you would put in Aubrey Bledsoe, the backup. Well, the week before against North Carolina at halftime during warm-ups, I think it was Laura Alloway cracked a ball that hit Bledsoe in the head, and she got a concussion. So just the perfect storm. They went out and signed an emergency backup, Caroline Stanley, and lo and behold, her first game on the bench, she's in the game. So Caroline Stanley goes in, and it didn't take, I guess, that long before Seattle broke through. In fact, it was a little bit of Caroline Stanley not getting a punch clear.
Yep.
She had a cross come in. She punched at it. It fell perfectly for Bev Yanez, who put it in the net, made it 1-0. And then it was good, like, oh, wow, this is really not good. The chances are very, very bleak now.
Or so we thought.
But, yeah, but, you know, Orlando's got this player from Brazil named Marta.
Marta.
She's kind of good.
A little bit good.
Yeah, a little kind of good. I think she's won some awards and stuff. So the funny thing is, goalkeeper error on the other end, Haley Kottmeyer, who incidentally may be the beneficiary with the U.S. Women's National Team with Harris out
right.
for the June friendlies. She goes to take a goal kick, and she tries to pass it to a teammate. Well, the teammate was either not paying that much attention or was caught sleeping or just wasn't aware of the danger. But certainly Kottmeyer should not give her teammate a ball with Camilla and Marta bearing down on her.
No, that was a bad idea.
So Camilla got there about the same time as the ball, poked it over to Marta. Marta puts it in the net. We got a 1-1 game. And, you know, there were some opportunities there for the Pride in that game also to get a second one. But they didn't. The last few minutes of the game was – all Seattle, but they couldn't put another one past Caroline Stanley. And, you know, it ended up in a 1-1 draw. And I think that first point that the Pride have gotten on the West Coast, you know, considering the Portland and Seattle teams, the West Coast teams. So not bad. They get to come home. They don't come home. They actually came home to train, and then they're going to Sky Blue.
That's right.
This week. So the Pride moved up to eighth in the standings. And granted, there's still only one win on to show for it. But this team, Dave, has played 6 games. 4 of them have been on the road. And after this Saturday at Sky Blue, they will have played 5 of their first 7 games on the road. And obviously no Alex Morgan and no Ashlyn Harris now. So if they can get any kind of result at Sky Blue and come home with, you know, a point, maybe even 3, this is a team that can make a run with all of the backloaded home schedule.
The backloaded home schedule is going to be huge, especially – all right, so as we know, Harris is out and Morgan's not back yet. But at some point, they're both going to be back. And in the meantime, you've got – well, let's see, scoring goals. Oh, yeah, right, Marta. only one of the best women's players ever. And then, you know, Caroline Stanley, I mean, talk about coming in – and stepping up. I mean, yes, so first goal or that only goal she gave up, okay, that sucks. But the rest of the game, she was on. I mean, she kept everything else out. That's all you can ask of a backup goalie or not quite third string, but an emergency signing goalie to come in and do that. So, you know, kudos to her for that. Of course, you know, of course, Marta, if Camilla gets on that ball and gets it over to Marta, well, that was going to be a goal. I mean, Marta's in the box with just her one-on-one with the keeper. Yeah. Okay. I wasn't worried about that at all. So, that was going to be a goal. And then after that, like you said, plenty of chances for the Pride to actually steal 3 points. It wasn't quite able to happen, but no. You know, 5 out of 7 games on the road after we go up to Sky Blue, it's going to be obviously Harris is still going to be out, so it'll be interesting to see what happens between the sticks. But if they can keep like you said, I mean, one win, but and yet there's a feeling that it's all going to come together at some point when everybody comes back and that backloaded schedule. And it's almost like a, you know, we're in the beginning of the part of the movie where the team is struggling, but then, you know, everybody comes together and somebody makes a great speech and all of a sudden, you know, they win. And so I'm despite the record, I feel pretty good about this team.
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, if they could stay in contact, within a – like I always think of it like baseball. You're a game back, right?
Right.
If you're in soccer, you're 3 points back, you're a game back basically.
Yep.
So if they can stay within that one game or 1.5 games back of the 4 playoff spots, then, you know, get their – they've got 2 3-game home stands later in the year. They've got way more home games than road games the rest of the way out. There's absolutely no reason they can't make a run, especially getting Morgan back and having Morgan and Marta play together. Man, it really does set up nicely for Tom Sormani's group. And he, the schedule makers couldn't have made a harder schedule to start the year. Going to Portland, going to Seattle, going to North Carolina, playing the Shield winners and the two teams from the finalists of last year, in the first 3 weeks. It could not have been a tougher schedule to eke out. And they came through it. They came through the hardest part of the schedule. So now all they need to do is get another win. If they can get one at Sky Blue or even get a draw to stay, keep that momentum going and then start getting some home games in, there's really a good feeling. And I think the back line is – played a role. They've only given up one goal in each of the last three games. Camilla played fantastic against Seattle. I think she had four chances created and some shots. And I think she's a player that continues to evolve. And she obviously plays well with Marta.
Right. And they're not the only ones. I mean, everybody is, Steph Catley is doing well. There's a lot of players that are stepping up, creating chances, doing what they need to. And then, like you just said, with whenever Alex gets back, and we have Alex and Marta at the same time, it's entirely possible that the fandom will explode the first time that those two are on the field together. So, things are looking up. They managed to get through that ridiculous first part of the season, and that allows that back end of the season to offer a lot of opportunity. Are they going to win them all? Of course not. But the opportunity for a lot of points is going to be there, especially with the players that we have, the Martas being there with the experience they have, and then the other players developing. So it looks good. It looks like there's a lot of potential. I mean, it remains to be seen what happens. But like I said, I'm feeling pretty happy about it.
Well, hopefully they can go up, take care of – if they got to keep a close eye on Sam Kerr and Kelly O'Hara and Sky Blue FC and hopefully come home with some points and move forward into the weekend. Or the week ahead and finally getting a home game. So good luck to Tom Sormani's crew, and hopefully they can get that. Unfortunately, we didn't get the Chi Ubogagu bump because she had a hamstring issue and didn't play over the weekend. So maybe she saved it for a week.
That's right. I mean, there is no time limit on the bump. So, it's entirely possible that it'll happen later.
Yeah. So Ashlyn Harris, the announcement came out today, is going to miss about 2 months, Dave. She injured her quadricep near her hip, and it's going to take 8 weeks or so to heal. She's going to miss 8 games. She's going to miss the U.S. women's national team trip to Europe for a couple friendlies in Sweden and Norway. Hopefully she'll be back in time to play, I think, July 22nd, and then maybe play in the tournament that's going to be out west with Australia and Brazil and Japan. And hopefully she'll be able to play in that and go after her starting spot with the U.S. women's national team. But it's a big blow, and hopefully the team can weather the storm. We don't know if Aubrey Bledsoe is going to be in uniform or not this weekend. If I had to guess, I'd say maybe another week before she comes back. So there may be another emergency goalkeeper signing to put somebody behind Caroline Stanley for this weekend. And, hopefully Aubrey Bledsoe will be back sooner rather than later and be able to provide Tom Sormani some coverage in front of that net. Dave, before we get to our guest, an incident happened this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Involves a former Orlando City head coach. Adrian Heath, in fact, Inchy himself. He took a stroll out onto the pitch again.
wait a minute. Is it? Wait, what year is it?
It's 2017, and this is not a repeat. I mean, I guess it is a repeat, but it's not the same exact instance. But Adrian Heath, my friends, is a repeat offender.
Oof.
In 2015, he stepped on the pitch and was fined for it. Didn't go all the way on the pitch, I guess. He stepped on the pitch is the way they worded it in a game against, I think it was New York City FC. In that same game, Mark Watson entered the pitch. So those are the ways, that's the way that the MLS worded it. So I'm guessing that Mark Watson entered the pitch, meaning he both feet on the pitch, and stepped on the pitch for Adrian Heath, meaning I guess that he only had one foot on the pitch. But anyway, he got a fine. Watson got suspended for a game. And in 2016, and by the way, that happened in the 54th minute of a game. And the next year, in the 54th minute of a game, Adrian Heath stepped on the ball, stepped on the field to get a ball, and this time he was suspended. He was against, I think, New York Red Bulls, and he was suspended for the Sporting Kansas City game, as you may recall.
Oh yeah.
Mark Watson took over for head coach for the second time, because the first time was in 2015 when Inchy was ejected from the Red Bulls game, and Watson had to coach against New York City FC. But this was the second time. So they go to Sporting Kansas City. The team gets beat only 2-1, which was amazing considering they got outshot 34-7. 34-7 they got outshot.
I remember that game, yeah.
I don't think Mark Watson quite got the defensive message across to his team that day. And now he just did it this past weekend against what? LA Galaxy? Stepped out on the pitch to get a ball.
Yep.
Stepped out on the pitch to get a ball. A year and 15 days. A year and 15 days since the last time he did it. And this time it was in the 48th minute.
Well, he's at a new team, though. So obviously the time – there's – well, no, think about it. There's a time difference because he's in a different time zone.
Yeah, I don't think there's any such thing as a time difference of 6 minutes. I don't think that exists in the international
game. You're not doing the calculations for a 90-minute game.
So anyway – clearly, Adrian Heath needs to be chained to the bench when he comes back from halftime, because something happens right after halftime to where he just feels like, I need to get out there.
Well, he is a former player, so, you know, I mean, he's probably feeling that.
Alicia Delgallo of the Orlando Sentinel reporting this evening that he will not be suspended this week. Does that surprise you, Dave?
Yes, actually it does, because when I heard about that, I actually went to E Pluribus Lunum, our fellow SB Nation site, and I was thinking, okay, surely we are going to see that Heath is suspended just as he was for us.
Yeah.
And even their coverage said probably going to be suspended.
Yeah. I think it was almost everybody just assumed it would happen because it has always happened before.
There was precedent.
And like I said, repeat offender, third time in 3 years in the league that he's done it. So I guess I just don't get it. I mean, I get that, you know, the league's like, oh, he's going to go up against his old team. We have to let him play, you know, have to let him be on the field. No, you don't. It's, you know, you still suspended Dom Dwyer for 5 yellow cards.
Right.
You know, you could have just not given Dom a yellow card the week before, you know, Sporting came here. And, you know, I mean, I guess Dom could have gotten more than 2 goals, but his replacement scored 2 in a 2-2 tie. So that kind of sucked for Orlando as it was. And now, you know, we don't get to put 34 shots on Mark Watson, coach team. It's going to be Inchy on Saturday night.
Well, you know what? Yeah, it's a little bit unbelievable that he isn't suspended. I don't know why. I'm very hesitant to call conspiracy in regards to them doing it for reasons of him playing against the old team or coaching against the old team. I don't think they're that smart.
Well, I called them I called the disciplinary committee, or DISCO as we like to call them. I called them in an open letter to them last year, collectively an idiot. For that ruling, because it's a, you know what, it's a stupid rule.
So it's your fault they listen to you.
It is the dumbest of rules to say, you know, I know why it's in place. You don't want any confrontations. You don't want anybody interfering with play. I get all the reasons why that rule is in place, but he didn't violate the spirit of the law.
No,
because he didn't do any of that. He actually helped by going out and getting the extra ball so somebody didn't have to – I mean,
right.
You know how tedious games can get when they sort of bog down and then, you know, oh, there's a second ball on the pitch. Somebody's got to walk over and kick it off the field. I mean, literally, he's like 5 feet from it.
It's so a safety issue.
Yeah, so he just takes a step onto the pitch and gets the other ball out of there. And Ben Olsen did the same thing last year and got suspended for it. And I thought it was stupid then. And then it happened to Heath. And I thought it was even dumber then. And I did. I said, you need to look at this again. And I doubt that they listened to me, because if they listened to me, a lot of things would be different in this world. But at the same time, it's very ironic that this is the opportunity where they had the chance to say, okay, yeah, we're going to change our tactics on this. And, oh, yeah, it benefited Orlando's opponent before. It's benefiting Orlando's opponent again. Just weird.
You're trying to get me to believe in a conspiracy theory here. I can tell. I can tell.
I'm not trying. I did.
You're just putting the facts out there, and my own mind's going to it. I get it.
I said coincidence. I again, it's a dumb rule. I'm glad they're not suspending him because it's a dumb rule.
It is a dumb rule.
I just think it would have been really nice if it had not happened against us, where they actually got the opportunity to do the right thing. So anyway, we're going to talk to our guest a little bit more about Adrian Heath and about Minnesota United, a team we've never faced before, Dave Rowe. Not only you and me personally, but the team that we support has never played Minnesota United. So let's get to our special guest, because, man, we've been babbling a long time because we had to recap two Orlando City games and a Pride game. Not that we mind. We actually enjoy that. But we'll get to our guest right after this. All right, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, we're happy to have with us from the SB Nation Minnesota United blog, E Pluribus Lunum, Nate Seams. Nate, thanks for being with us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So before we really get into this, I wanted to just say this is actually a true story. I named your blog.
You did.
I did.
I will back you up on that, actually.
We had a discussion in the SB Nation chat blog, our Slack chat, about your blog when you guys came online and you were looking for a name. And I think what was cool was that you were kind of like us and looking for a name that was, you know, sort of tied into the team in some respects and was sort of unique. And I think somebody brought up Latin phrases and a play off of that, and I just rattled it off, and most of the people there seemed to like it, and you guys jumped on it, and I think it's worked pretty good for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Latin, if I remember correctly, comes from the Minnesota Timberwolves blog, because theirs is Latin, so we wanted to play off that. And then when he suggested that, we didn't want anything else.
Yeah,
we all started cracking up and took it.
Yeah, I didn't really know. I don't think any of us really knew kind of how serious it was, and then it just kind of happened, and it was kind of cool because now I'm responsible for two punny blog names on SB Nation's MLS sites, and I'm pretty proud of that. I think that's my greatest achievement, I think, in life.
I mean, it's something you should put on your business card. So.
I should for sure. Okay, so. We've never played you guys before, obviously, and you've never played us, and we're going to have a game on Saturday. All kinds of feels going on here, going up against our original coach and against the original, Kevin Molino, on Saturday night. I think the first thing I wanted to ask you about is the field stepping, the step onto the field by Adrian Heath, because he's been in hot water for that before. The 2015 season, he was fined for what the league called stepping onto the pitch, and then in 2016 he was suspended a game for what they call entering the pitch. And what he did last weekend was exactly the same thing he did in 2016 against the Red Bulls. Stepped onto the pitch just a few feet to grab a wayward ball. And we're hearing, though, that there's not going to be a suspension. And I think I think the word bullshit comes to mind from my perspective, because it's like, okay, you penalized Orlando City. Now Orlando City's playing Minnesota. He did it again, and you're not penalizing the team playing Orlando City. So I just want to get your thoughts on sort of the whole, you know, I guess, entering the pitch gate.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even see it live. I'm going to be honest. I wasn't watching for him to step onto the pitch.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not something you really think about while you're watching. And then when it all came to a head when we were talking about it in our Slack conversation. But yeah, it looks like for some reason they're just going to warn him this time. Apparently the last suspension wasn't warning enough.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's, to me, it seems like it might be just pushing the storyline of Heath playing his old club. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm happy that he's not being suspended because I think it's a little bit of a ticky-tack rule.
Yeah,
but
it is a dumb rule.
At this point,
I wrote
this one. I'm not going
to
complain.
Yeah, no kid. I wrote an open letter to the disciplinary committee after it happened last year. It was pretty stupid, and I wasn't coming at it just from Adrian Heath, because Ben Olsen had also had a suspension for the same thing a couple weeks before Adrian Heath did it. But I think a little bit this feels like you get a $200 fine for speeding, you speed again, you get a month in jail, and they figure, well, that's too harsh, so the next time you speed, you get nothing. It's kind of a little bit what it feels like to me. But it's cool, because it is a big storyline, and I don't think you guys want any part of Mark Watson coaching your team, because his team gave up 34 shots when he filled in for Inchy the last time he did that. So maybe a big,
yeah, no, I
big
don't,
bonus
I,
for
I
you.
Want Adrian.
All right, so let's talk about the actual game now. I wanted to start out by asking you about the team in general. Minnesota United, as I don't have to tell you, started the season just with a historically abysmal defense. But the team seems to have come around a little bit in recent weeks. I just wanted to get your thoughts on what the changes were that were made, and you know, in terms of, is it just personnel? Is it tactics? Is it both? What is the story behind Minnesota, you know, becoming a much more formidable opponent for teams?
I mean, I think it's mainly personnel when you think about it. I mean, they took Vadim Demidov off the field, and it's made all the difference. And Adrian Heath kept with that four-man back line, which is kind of something that I was actually arguing against, maybe going to a three, addition by subtraction, three-man back line. But he brought in Minnesota native Brent Coleman, and Coleman and Francisco Calvo seem to be having great chemistry back in on that back line in the center. It helps that Jerome Tison doesn't have 3 days of practice anymore, and actually can play. And then the trade for Mark Birch and Sam Cronin has made all the difference. Cronin has immediately stepped in and become a leader. I'm not surprised he's not wearing the captain's armband yet, but I think he will eventually. And Mark Birch, he is what he is, but he's a much better left back option than what we had. And then bringing Miguel Ibarra on has seemed to have woken up the offense as well. The first couple games, they were scoring well, but there's something with Miguel Ibarra. Is just, I think it might be his workmanlike take on the game, and that he's willing to run back as quickly as possible. He's willing to attack as quickly as possible. That the goals are coming, which is nice. And the nice thing is we're not giving up 100 goals every game.
Yeah, it's a little tough when you're giving up goals like that. Now, you mentioned the offense. Of course, those of us here in Orlando, Michael mentioned the original Kevin Molino. How is Kevin settling into the cold confines of Minnesota? And remember, it's cold up there no matter what for those of us down here. But anyway, how's he settling in up there, and how are the Minnesota fans embracing him?
It was shorts weather today. It was like 60 degrees. Kevin,
see that? Thanks for making my point for our listeners.
Jacket weather for you Floridians.
Jacket weather.
Kevin Molino has been wonderful. Arguably, I mean, him and Christian Ramirez are where the goals are coming from. And as the offense goes, as Molino goes, it's pretty obvious, especially against San Jose. It looked like the Earthquakes were really teeing off on Kevin Molino, and the offense just couldn't get going. So I personally was a little bit vocal about the trade originally. I just thought the team gave up a little too much money for him, mainly because I hadn't seen him as closely as you guys obviously had. But he clearly is the best offensive option on the team in terms of overall offensive ability. Obviously, Christian Ramirez can score goals at will, but Kevin Molino is basically the driving force behind most of the goals this season.
So I wanted to sort of get your thoughts on, you know, the match coming up, obviously Adrian Heath going up against his old team, Kevin Molino going up against his old team. I don't know how much time you guys spend, you know, around the club, but there seems to be, you know, you would think a little bit of added incentive. Certainly a motivated Kevin Molino is the most dangerous Kevin Molino. And I got to think that Adrian Heath wants to take a shot at his old team. But have you noticed anything? Have you guys been to training or anything and seen any of this evidence?
I mean, not quite yet. Hopefully we can get out to training this week and see if there's something. It seems like Adrian, he's trying to kind of play down the hype around it, at least in some of his statements recently. I mean, obviously it's there. There's no going around the storyline that Adrian, he's playing his old club, Kevin Molino angry that he was traded. But
Is he angry?
personally,
Is
as
that
a
real
fan
thing?
from the
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but is he angry because he, you know, the story that's being spun is that he asked to be moved.
I mean, I've heard both, so that's why I don't know if it's a storyline that you guys have heard, but I've heard both storylines. Personally, I agree with that storyline that he has to be moved, because that's I remember that was a big storyline before the trade, was that he was not happy in Orlando. But personally, the way I see the game coming up, especially from the fans' perspective, is I just see it as another match. But obviously, it means more to Heath and Molino than it would just to a random fan. So I haven't seen anything big, but obviously it's going to be there. There's no denying that. So personally, I haven't seen anything. I haven't heard anything. Like I said, it seems like Heath is trying to play it down a little bit. But I haven't been around practice this week yet, and hopefully one of my riders will be out tomorrow, and maybe they'll see something more. But being the team itself is pushing for other initiatives this weekend, rather than just that storyline. So I would be surprised if around practice there's a buzz about Heath playing his old club or Molino playing his old club.
Well, of course he is playing the old club, but he's going to be doing it at home, or at least his new home. So I'm curious. You know, obviously you guys only have so many games in MLS. Are there any particular home advantages in Minnesota other than the 60-degree short jacket, depending on your perspective weather?
I mean, if you talk to the LA Galaxy, the turf is awful. But honestly, it doesn't. It seems like they feed off the fans. That's very evident, especially against the Galaxy this past weekend. The fans were super loud. So any normal home field advantages, feeding off your fans, being in front of your fans. But other than that, I mean, if you're not used to the cold weather, it's not going to be that cold this weekend. Then it's not going to help. I mean, I'd say that the cold weather would be an advantage, but we all saw what happened in the Snow Bowl. I would say that the big thing is just playing. I mean, it's a simple home field advantage, playing in front of your own fans, hearing them cheer your name, hearing them going after the other team. And then, like I said, if you believe the LA Galaxy, the turf is awful. So.
Well, I will say that having watched a few games, I would say that it certainly looks like the turf wouldn't be the best playing surface. There appears to be a seam on the far side opposite the camera where maybe they widened the pitch or something, but it definitely doesn't. It's not the most picturesque pitch, I'll put it that way. So, the Minnesota's coming in obviously at the same time as Atlanta United. When Orlando City came into MLS, it was New York City FC, and there's, I guess, a mild rivalry in that Orlando City pretty much hates New York City, but New York doesn't really reciprocate that all that much because they have other teams closer by. Do you feel any type of sibling rivalry with Atlanta United, or has there been another team that's sort of picked up as a natural rival for you guys yet?
I mean, yes and no with Atlanta United. I'd say it kind of seems like our fans take exception to all the attention that they got coming
Well, they
into the
invented
league
soccer,
rather than, yeah, pretty much. I mean, that seems like most people seem to take exception to that as well. And obviously, the beatdown that Atlanta United gave to Minnesota United didn't help matters. And I think it's always going to be like that Orlando City, New York City kind of friendly rivalry. Mm-hmm. One cares more about the other. Because it doesn't seem like Atlanta United fans really care that much against Minnesota United, except for that one fan that had the jersey printed with the score on it. I'm guessing he doesn't like Minnesota United. But in terms of like natural rivals, Sporting Kansas City seems to be the one that's coming up. Minnesota United's faced them, I believe, 3 out of the last 4 years in the U.S. Open Cup as it was, including this coming matchup. And last year's game in Blaine, Minnesota was not a friendly match by any means. I believe it was 10, I could be wrong on this, but I believe it was 10 yellow cards shown in that game. So it's definitely going to probably be Sporting Kansas City as the main rival. I don't think we've played enough teams yet to really see who else it could be. Mm-hmm. But like I said, yeah, I don't think Atlanta United fans really care that much about Minnesota United fans, but Minnesota United fans definitely took exception to all the attention they got coming into the league rather than Minnesota United. Mm-hmm. Minnesota United got attention, but it wasn't the best attention in the world.
Gotcha. Well, looking ahead to Saturday, obviously both teams coming off of losses. When you're looking at Orlando City, what aspect of their game gives you the most concern, and what part do you think Minnesota can take advantage of?
I'll give you one name that gives me concern, and his name is Kyle Larin. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what's going on with him. He's arguably the best player I've seen come into the league in years. And so that's obvious, and especially with the defensive problems that Minnesota United has seemed to have figured out, but they definitely still have extremely bad mental lapses in the game. So Kyle Larin obviously keeps most coaches up at night. In terms of what Minnesota United can exploit, I think if they play their offensive game well and allow hopefully a fired up Kevin Molino to have free range of the field, I think it could be a high scoring match. And I think if Minnesota United just plays their game, which is free flowing and offensive, pretty typical Adrian Heath, I think they can exploit Orlando City. I admittedly haven't watched a ton of Orlando City this year, so I'm not sure how great their defense has been this year. But Minnesota United has exploited other pretty good defenses. I mean, they scored 2 at Colorado, which is impressive no matter who you are. So I think that's the best way to exploit Orlando City. But like I said, I mean, Kyle Larin is otherworldly.
All right, Nate, before we let you get out of here, just wanted to – well, first of all, let me ask you, does a coach playing against his old players have more of an advantage than the old players playing against their old coach? Who do you think has an advantage in that kind of matchup?
That's a solid question. Bias me wants to say coach against his old players, but, you know, personally, I think the players might have an advantage. They know the system. They know how the coach wants to play. Mm-hmm. So they can go into the game thinking, well, this is how he's going to attack us. Let's just avoid that. So I would honestly give the advantage to Orlando City in that case. I personally have never been put in that situation, so I'm not aware of what would be more of an advantage, but I could definitely see more of an advantage for the players than the coach actually in that situation. All right. I think it's easier for the players to adjust than the coach to adjust.
Sounds good.
It might be a weird take on it.
But. No, it makes sense. Your logic is sound, I think. I don't know if I was thinking about that today and I thought, I really don't know. I mean, because the players obviously know how the coach wants to play, and the coach – you would think knows the strengths and weaknesses of the players. So it's kind of, maybe it's a wash. I don't know. But I thought I'd ask you that question.
I think it's a wash.
So before you get out of here, I wanted to get your key matchup for the game and what you predict the score will be at the conclusion of the 90 plus whatever minutes.
I think the key matchup will be Christian Ramirez versus Orlando City's back line. Christian Ramirez has a tendency to disappear at times during the game and come out of nowhere to score a goal. So as long as Orlando City can keep tabs on him for a full 90 minutes, I think that changes things. And as much as it pains me to say, I'm predicting 3-2 Orlando City.
All right. Well, I hope that you're a better predictor of scores than I am, because I'm very bad at it.
We've been notoriously bad at it of late.
So anyway, Nate Seams from E Pluribus Lunum, the very well-named blog covering Minnesota United for SB Nation. Thanks so much for being with us, and we look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Thanks for having me.
My goodness, this is a lengthy, lengthy edition of the Mainland Podcast here in episode number 87, but I think a pretty good one. And before we wrap it up, David Rowe, I want to be sure to we thank again our guest Nate Seams from E Pluribus Lunum, and his crew over there is doing a bang-up job covering Minnesota United for SB Nation. Check them out over there. I forgot to get his information, get him to give his information to follow him on Twitter and all that stuff, but it's Nate Seams. His last name is spelled S-I-E-M-S. If you go over to epluribuslunum.com and you look on their staff page, you can probably get his Twitter and all that stuff off there. But he's a good dude, and we're happy to have had him on and talked a little bit of soccer with him. Dave, before we get out of here, we're, of course, going to have to talk a little bit more about this Minnesota matchup, just you and me, without the interference of a third party from a very biased pro-Minnesota blogger. But before we do that, I wanted to mention that we haven't talked about Orlando City B, and that's because they've been off. They've been off all week, and they had another two-week break. But they're back in action this weekend, Saturday night. All three teams in action, Dave, at the same time.
Well, sure, because they just like making our jobs harder.
Yeah, I mean, you can't even really DVR them all because, you know, you get the streaming thing going on with the NWSL and the USL. So, but we'll have full coverage of Orlando City B against Charlotte. They're coming back home. OCB finally playing a home game. It will be interesting to see who gets minutes in that game. We have not been seeing Haji Berry in the lineup for the MLS side, so maybe he'll get a start. Maybe we'll see more of Rafael Ramos and Seb Hines for the Young Lions. So we'll have Scott Carnival at the game to cover that and bring the recap. You can find that at themainland.com on Saturday night. I'm going to be very busy because I've got coverage duties for the Minnesota game, and I'm sure that it's also my edit night, so I'll be editing the recaps post-game of both the Pride and OCB. So it's going to be a late night for me.
Are you saying that you do a lot of work for this?
Well,
for our listeners who don't know, Michael does a lot of work.
It's only a second full-time job. That's all with beer money, essentially, is what I get. And really, the beer I drink, it's not even beer money.
No, not the beer we drink. You're right.
So anyway, let's wrap this up. The folks have something to do, and I'm sure their commute is probably not as long as mine for most of them, so they don't get to listen to the podcast all in one sitting the way I usually do. But anyway, Orlando City going to Minnesota United. First matchup between the two teams. It's a team that started the season just horribly and looked like it was going to be a team that, you know, was not only bad, not only a last place team, but historically bad and potentially like record settingly bad. They gave up so many goals their first few games, and it just looked like they could not keep from giving up 4 goals a game. And that would have been a record at the end of the year had they kept up that pace. But they actually have, you know, they made a nice trade with Colorado, which I don't see what really Colorado got out of that deal. But Minnesota shored up both their defensive midfield and their back line with one trade. And just that little tweak, plus, obviously some probably come to God moments with the coaching staff, come to Jesus meetings with in the locker room, they've rallied, and they're actually a tough out now. They are not an easy team to beat, and they will be at home. They'll be feeling pretty confident, and they're going to have Orlando City's former coach. They're going to have Orlando City's multiple goal and assist getter from last year, Kevin Molino, leading their offense, and he's going to be motivated. I think we all know how scary Kevin Molino is when he's motivated. It's the times that he's not motivated that really kind of kept him from becoming just an all-star player last year. And he still has some of those moments, but he's not going to have those, Dave, against Orlando City.
No, I think we're all a little miffed that they were able to pull all of that together right before we head up there. and then not only that, but not only heading up there, but on the road again.
Yeah.
We talked earlier about the how ridiculous this month and how brutal this month has been. Well, here we go. We're back at it. We're on the road. We're going to someplace we've never been before on a pitch that we've never played before against a coach that we do know and a player that we do know who, Inchy and then the original. It's that makes it a wee bit tough for us. The only thing I'm going to say is that given that we have so many new players on our squad, not everybody on the team has all the memories from prior, so that helps us a little bit.
I don't know, but your cat sounds terrified.
Like, you know what? He's not as terrified as I am. It's a tough haul anytime we go play away in the MLS. We know that, and I would have liked to have gotten these guys early in the year, but it is what it is. So all we can do is go up there, do our best. We've actually had a regular week this week, so it's not a short week. It's not a week where we've got another game, 3 days later or whatever. So it's not quite as bad, and I don't know. This is one of those ones that could go any which direction.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I know that it's going to be, it's not going to be easy. One thing you can count on about Adrian Heath's teams is that they will get scoring chances, and they've got guys that can finish. Christian Ramirez has shown that he can finish. Miguel Ibarra is a dangerous player. Obviously, Kevin Molino is a dangerous player. So they've got some firepower, some weapons. And they're going to take us very seriously and try to get 3 points for their coach, who was very, very much maligned early in the season. And in fact, it was only a few games in where people were starting to wonder if he was going to make it to the All-Star break. But to Adrian Heath's credit, and I like Adrian Heath a lot. I've talked to him several times when he was the coach
here,
in not just in press conferences, but in more casual, relaxed atmospheres. And he just seems like a good dude to me. So I'm glad that he was able to turn that around. But I hope he colossally Fs things up on Saturday night. the two things you know about this team is you're going to get chances to score on them. They're going to get chances to score on you. Who does it best will come out on top, as it was the case here for 2 years or a year and a half. What is your key matchup and your scoreline prediction for Saturday night?
Okay, so you're absolutely right. It's all going to come down to the offense. And, so I think it's going to be I know what their offense is going to do. I think we're actually going to have to try and to outscore, and that's been a problem as of late. But as I mentioned earlier, Kyle does seem to have a set amount that he is going to score in any given amount of time, and then he is due. So I think we'll see something there. Given the actual regular week that they're going to have, even though they're traveling, I think that's going to help with the stamina and the mental health of everybody. Plus, you mentioned earlier that, where does the advantage go? Does it go to the coach against the former players or the players against the former coach? So I think it's going to come down to how we finish in the last third. And I think that it's going to be a 2-2 draw. Kyle will get one. Kaka will get one. Molina will get one. And Ramirez will get one.
Okay, so all the big shooters are going to score all the offense. So just to be sure that I know what you mean, your key matchup is Rivas and Laren,
against
and making
just
that
producing,
finishing in the final third,
correct.
In the final third.
Just producing.
So beating their defense and goalkeeper.
Correct.
Essentially. All right. Well, my key matchup, that's pretty solid. That's pretty solid, logic there. I'm going to say that my key matchup is the Orlando City defensive players, not the back four alone, but the back four plus maybe Nocerino and maybe Johnson or Higuita.
Okay.
Against Kevin Molino. I think that team goes as Kevin goes, and if they can keep Kevin under wraps and frustrate him and foul him a little early and maybe rough him up a little bit, get him off his game, I think maybe that they can go up there and get a good result on the frozen tundra, 60-degree frozen tundra of Minnesota. I think one advantage that the team has is, the Lions have played on bad AstroTurf in the past. So while every turf is different, they'll go up and they'll play on a bad artificial surface, and most of them have already done that before. This may actually be a situation where Nocerino doesn't play. With a game in the midweek coming up next week against DC, mm-hmm. I think there's an opportunity there to rest a guy and not play him on artificial turf. And he's had a calf injury. So I think maybe it's a case of potentially not playing Nocerino, potentially leaving Spector to start on the bench and bringing him in, although I know Christ doesn't like to do that. Maybe he'll try to get away with it and play the two youngsters like he did at Houston, which wouldn't be good. Or no, I'm sorry. I don't know. Because, that was Redding and Redding and Aja at the time. This would be
right.
This would be Pereira and Aja.
That's way different.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what he'll do. I guess the interesting thing we'll be watching to see what the lineup looks like, because again, it is artificial turf and some guys have some knocks, and one of the Spector's logged a lot of minutes. He's got an ankle thing that's been bothering him. Nocerino's got a calf thing. He could also bring Kakan Rivas off the bench again. As he did at San Jose. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Yeah. But I really think that the situation is the central defense and central midfielders against Kevin Molino and keeping him out of dangerous areas. And more importantly, keeping his passes out of dangerous areas.
Okay.
I think that
and
for me, that's
so
a key
your
matchup.
Actual score prediction.
My
is?
Score prediction is, I thought Nate had a pretty good score prediction of 3-2 for Orlando City until I considered the fact that Orlando City hasn't scored 3 goals this year, at least not 3 that counted. They did score 3 against Sporting Kansas City, only to see one waved off. I don't think I can predict them to have 3 goals until they actually show me they can score 3 goals in a game. So I'm going to also say 2-2 draw, because I think that Minnesota is going to be fired up. I think they're going to have scoring opportunities. And again, Kevin Molino going up against him terrifies me because he will be motivated fully. And right. 100% for this game. So that's my prediction, 2-2. And I really, really hope that maybe Orlando can find that third goal this time.
Dang it, man. I was hoping you were going to disagree with me this time going the other way. I was thinking that this time I was like, okay, I'm going to be conservative, 2-2. I was hoping that you were going to be like, 3-2, no, I'll go 2-1. I was really hoping.
well. If Laren's slump continues, we're not even going to get to 2. So
yeah, that's a good point.
I think that he really needs to have a good game and get back on the score sheet. I mean, he's the kind of player that if he goes out and just pops a couple in the net in one game, he could end up with like 5 over a 3-game span.
Right.
So he really needs to get that streak going. It would be nice if some guys would help him out a little bit. Obviously, Rivas is a guy who should score more goals. Kaká could maybe lend a hand like you predicted him to have a goal. And also, somebody like Giles Barnes or MPG or somebody unexpected has got to step up and score a goal. Could even be Will Johnson again.
At some point. Yeah. You know, you brought it up, how he brought in Rivas and Kaká in that game, and I that worked out very nicely versus, and I didn't mention earlier, bringing in MPG and Barnes. I don't think bringing those two in, at least right now, is the necessary scoring spark that you need.
Yeah, I mean it hasn't worked out so far, obviously, but it's been one of those...
a fresh legs Rivas is a. I mean, fresh legs Rivas is a game changer.
Yeah, I think that those two in particular are very good off the bench, but you definitely don't want Rivas to think he's a bench player. He has to think he's a starter.
No, definitely not.
Think he's a starter, making some spot, you know, bench appearances, because it just seems to his confidence is sky high, and he is dangerous coming on in the. He comes on in the 60th or 70th minute when the defense and midfield are already, you know, have that many minutes on their legs, and it's just not even fair.
No, at that point he is quite literally Barry Allen the Flash and just blowing by people. So yeah,
absolutely. So I guess that'll do it, Dave. I think we've gotten everything in. We've talked about a lot of stuff. Obviously, these double game weeks are you know, they create more work for everybody, but they also usually create more fun. It would be nice to get a few more wins, but hopefully we'll see the light at the end of that tunnel and get closer, and it will be the exit and not the train that we see making the light. Anyway.
Well, at that, and we also want all our listeners to know that once we get out of this double game week stuff, you won't have to listen to us as much. It'll be, you know, these will be shorter. You know, we try, but it'll be better.
But you'll still have to listen.
Well, no, I didn't say you. I said as much.
Part of your court mandated. It's part of your court mandated community service, and you're not going to duck that. There's just no getting around it. The judge will hear of it. So anyway, Dave, people can find us at themainland.com. We write a bunch of stories. I mean, I don't think anybody maybe on SB Nation in the entirety of the MLS blogs produces more content than us. I mean, maybe some produce as much, you know, but I'd say we're definitely in the top three for content production. We write a lot of stories. We've got three teams to cover. There's something for everybody. And there's a voice for you. You might hate mine, but like Dave's. You might hate Dave's, but like, you know, Austin's. You might hate Austin's and like Gavin's. I mean, who knows? But there's
whoa.
What?
Like Gavin's?
Yeah, well, somebody must. It takes all kinds, man.
I guess he has family. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he does. He does have family. So anyway,
love you, Gavin.
There's plenty to like. TheMainland.com. Read our stuff. Please. You know, follow us on Twitter at The Mainland, like our Facebook page, and please, if you you know, go to iTunes and give us a very honest star rating and leave a review of what you think of the show, and that will help other people determine whether or not they would like to listen to our show. So that's what we would ask of you. That's all. It's a very, very low cost of $0.00, and we would really appreciate that. But that is all the time we have, and then some, for this episode, what did I say, number 87?
Seven.
87 of the Mainland Podcast. So on behalf of David Rowe, I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off, as I always do, by saying, Go City.